Everyone, here we come from our underground bunker deep in Appalachia. We're bringing you This Week in Mormons, your source.
It's the Underground Mormon News Network.
Yes.
The UMNN. It's the Mongolian name for our show.
You mean like Ulaanbaatar? How do you say that?
Ulaanbaatar.
See, here's the thing with Mongolian. They like to write it with the Cyrillic alphabet.
Jeff, tell me. What? Here's the thing with Mongolians. What's the thing with Mongolians?
I've got nothing constructive to say. All I'm saying is it's a Mongolic language written in the Cyrillic alphabet. That's
a Mongolic language? Is that an adjective that actually means something?
Mongolian is its own language group. It is not Turkic. It is not Chinese. It is Mongolic.
Really? I didn't know that. Jeff, you are astounding. It might be
Altaic by nature. I'm not entirely sure about that part of it, but as far as I know, other Mongolic languages, since you care so much, you've got Kalmakia, which they speak out there in Russia.
I don't care.
You know, things like that. Incidentally, Ulaanbaatar is building a giant skyscraper shaped like an instrument with a horse head. I kind of want to see that.
I'm sorry, what? You kind of brushed past that horse head.
Horse head.
Skyscraper.
There's an instrument, like a stringed one. I don't know what it's called.
I'm assuming any instrument that dons a horse head has to be called like the horse head. I don't feel like they have liberty to call it anything but I'm playing the horse head.
I don't know how to explain what it's called. I've seen pictures.
This here is called a harp. Yeah, but there's a horse head on it.
I believe it's called the Morin Kur complex.
Can you just Google horse head instrument building?
I just Googled horse tower Ulaanbaatar.
And there it was.
There it was. I don't know anything else. What do I know? I've never been there. I'm a fool.
All the hipsters, the phrase that everybody's going to hear this summer is, I got to go base jump the horse head. And that's where everybody's going to be going.
And Mongolia.
I don't even want to go just imagining the traffic and congestion getting up to the horse head skyscraper is going to be awful.
It's going to be terrible. Well, this is a wonderful discussion about Mongolia. Very exciting. I feel like we've served our purpose. All ready for the week.
I love a good Mongolian accent. Can I just say,
you know,
in college, I had a good friend that was Mongolian. I'm 90% sure that he was a midget, and he had the he was just this little guy with this cute little voice, and he spoke English with a little It was adorable,
and that's the Mongolian accent, according to you.
Oh yeah, well there was him, and then this other kid, AK, who was like my same height, probably weighed 40 pounds more than I did. It was just this monster. So I got the best of both worlds.
What about the ladies, Al? Maybe that's the secret recipe for you. You need to get a girl with a Mongolian accent. Maybe that's what you're missing.
Any girl that would be comfortable sleeping in a camel carcass, I feel like would be comfortable sleeping with me.
Exactly.
I'm just saying that might be the right model.
That's pretty much the perfect analogy, actually.
She's like, no, I embrace camel hair. Wait, what do they ride over there? Horses, not camels.
They might have
camels too.
Well, there's camels in like the Gobi Desert, so you know. But yeah, they're big on horse culture in Mongolia. That is true, folks. If you or anyone you know served a mission in Mongolia, and we have spoken falsehoods, please feel free to drop us an email. Contact at thisweekinmormons.com.
In fact, this is true with anything. If you ever hear us make a mistake, I want you to email us and yell at us.
And we don't care if it's off topic or not. If we are wrong about Mongolia, hey. So be it.
No, we'll find a way to try and make fun of you. So if that's your jam, challenge
Al and
accepted.
I only have specific regions of expertise, okay? We're both good at Ukraine, and I'm good at Catalonia.
I fare pretty well in Russia. Jeff is much better in Spain.
I'm a bit of a Balkanophile, too. I kind of enjoy that, so
there's... I venture into the Pacific Isles very well.
And you know those much better than I. Oh, yes, my friend.
Okay, well, anyway, so yeah, I dare you, try and mock us. We'll make fun of you, and it'll be a good time for us.
Oh, it'll be a party all around.
This is what Christianity is about. See, this is Mormonism bringing us together as a family, like this.
It's like we have to deconstruct to construct.
Yeah, no, we're like the Marines in that way. We're going to break you down into nothing and then build you back up exactly how we would have you.
That sounds perfect. Right. That also sounds, this reminds me of that famous talk of, you know, the gardener, the pruner, whatever, you know, thank you for loving me enough to cut my branches.
I'm the gardener here.
Yes.
I know what I'm doing. Shut your face, Bush.
We at This Week in Mormons are the gardener or something. Wait a
minute. We're the gardener.
Wait a minute.
We're the gardener. Well, only around shrubbery. But that's all right. Hey, Jeff, how was your week, man? I feel like we're dilly-dallying on Mongolia. Mongolia always
trips us up. Anytime we're together.
What craziness did you do this week? What exciting things happened?
Oh, let me tell you about my exciting week. I watched The Monuments Men, which I give a C+.
C, maybe.
Maybe.
The Monument, it was a good story, terrible pacing.
I was confused. Like, tonally, it was very confusing to me. I said, am I supposed to be laughing? Is this supposed to be an intense drama with moments of levity? Is this a farce? It was very confusing. Even the
men
music.
Men were dying, and John Candy was in that. Who? Not John Candy.
Not John
Who's
Candy.
The fat guy?
John Candy last graced us with
John
Black
Goodman.
East. John who?
Who else? What else? Who's the fat guy in there? Lyle Lovett. I don't know.
You mean
there was George Clooney and a fat guy, and I like those are two contrasting acting types. I feel.
Uh huh. George Clooney. You mean John Goodman? I believe is who you're thinking of.
That's what I said. Oh, I said Candy. Never
mind. I said John Candy, who sadly has
John Oliwa Candy. Yeah. That great actor.
Anyway.
Oh, so you watched The Monument. Did you go out and see it, or did you sit inside your house like an idiot?
I sat inside my house like an idiot. Why would I go somewhere? I'm very picky about movies I pay to spend money on.
Okay, all right. No, so that was that your weekend, or was that a weekday?
Well, that was on Saturday night.
Oh,
I don't remember what I did on Friday, to be perfectly honest with you. Oh, that's what happened.
Well, that's
my wife had girls' night at a Nationals game, so I walked to
your
Popeyes.
Your wife
myself.
Went to a baseball game, and what did you do?
I went to Popeyes.
Jeff, I'm so sad for you.
I went on a beautiful stroll up the street, past all the immigrant neighborhoods, and just, you know.
Hold on. Popeyes is never found not in an immigrant neighborhood.
Yeah, yeah. That's...
You walked too far.
No, it was kind of like you enter the neighborhood, and then it's on the periphery.
Oh, I see.
That was an exciting evening for me, and you know, it was a chill weekend, and I had to get back in the groove with primary, and after being
finally
away,
a chill, yeah.
And we were away
what if
for
you
would
have shown up unprepared? Those kids would have eaten you alive.
They still eat us alive. Oh my goodness.
I know. That's why I'm saying just don't prepare.
If we don't prepare anything for primary, I know it becomes utter chaos because we've heard from other people who have had incidences without lessons prepared. It gets crazy.
Whoa, boy. All right.
Be careful, people. So
keep your head on a swivel in there.
All in all, I had a rather straightforward, less exciting week. Tell me how you're doing.
I decided to transfer my records out to my ward out here in
That's
Missouri.
That's funny, because I was going to ask you if you were going to do that. I actually was.
Yeah, well, I'm out here for a good chunk of the summer, and so I decided I was pulling the records over. Here's what happened. I went to the temple on Saturday, May 31st. It was the last day my recommend was good, and I said, well, I'm not back in Salt Lake for a while.
By the way,
it's easier to just pull the records out here.
Doesn't this ring a bell to 2 years ago when I was there in Kansas City and we had to hastily get your temple recommend renewed before we went on a road trip? It seems to be a common thread with you, but okay.
Yeah, well, I end up with dramatic moments. It was actually really good. I had a great talk with our bishop out here who I knew growing up, and we talked about... And I didn't know this was a thing, but we talked about Leah Hona versus Iron Rod Mormons. Because I had a...
Sorry,
Leah
Hona versus Leah Hona. Iron Rod Mormons.
Yeah, I'd never heard of it either. Apparently it's a thing. And there's this idea that you're either a, like, hold to every word that comes out of the church as though it were exact and precise and
that's
whatever.
And that's Iron Rod.
That's doctrine. That's Iron Rod. Okay. I guess it could be like a
it's like Reagan
or something. Yeah. And then there's Leah Hona ing, which is you're pointed in a general direction and you are sort of consuming all of the data to build an aggregate that is guiding you. And so the church acts more as a guide rather than a handbook.
Okay.
So to speak.
Okay.
Well, I don't know that I'm explaining that exactly right. I came back home and I read a few articles on them. There's guys that have like, they have like a diagram where they have no spiritual commitment, no social commitment and no, and spiritual commitment. And you're, you try and like plot yourself on there to sort of guide you as to how, like, what kind of a Mormon you are, whatever it is. It was interesting. We got on this topic though. I've had a couple of buddies, just this last week that have left the church. Mm-hmm. And they, you know, they do the dramatic Facebook post. I am leaving. This is it for me. It's funny because it always sort of shakes me up, right? I'm never left with a, like, you don't walk away from that being like, yeah, we didn't need you anyway, sucker. Because, most of the, like the people that I know, I mean, they're people that I respect and that I feel are smart, intelligent people that serve great missions and have great, relations with church members and things like that. And so as they leave, I mean, man, it like kicks me in the gut and I sit down and I have to think through a lot of that stuff. And I was kind of having a rough week with sort of what I'm supposed to do with all of that, right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It was interesting. And so I was really glad to be able to sit down with my bishop, you know, to have a bishop out here that, and just talk through some of it. And I mean, Jeff, you and I often talk about it, but like having to digest weekly the news and stuff as it comes up is so helpful for us in our testimonies. And, man, it's good just because there's a lot of junk out there. You know, there's a lot of goofy stuff that would detract. And in my life, I have these spiritual milestones that I can always go back to. Right. I have like moments where I've felt the spirit and I can say to myself, I'm like, I know that right now I feel it. So if down the road, I'm not feeling it as much, right? We know that God is eternal and he's one eternal round and all that stuff. And so if the event comes where I think that the church may not be right, right? I need to go back to this milestone because the church hasn't changed. I've changed, right? So mm-hmm. maybe something in me is messed up or I'm not doing what I'm supposed to be doing or whatever it is. And so those spiritual milestones are incredibly significant to me because I go through these waves of like not understanding or not knowing entirely. But I don't know. It was a great conversation. I loved having it with a bishop and he was very open to having that discussion, which I thought was great.
And that really speaks to me to leaders being open to having those discussions. I've had all types of leaders in my life. And I think the ones who are just open to having frank discussions about whatever it may be do a lot more good than the ones who, you know, it's easier to be purely, I don't want to say by the book. There's nothing wrong with being by the book, but you know what I mean? It's easier to be, wrapped up in this very, you know, black and white is and isn't situation, especially when you're trying to govern a body of people because it leaves less room for nuance, less room for personal interpretation, blah, blah, blah. But I found it to be very useful. Well, if I'm ever in such a position in my life, I certainly hope I will be open-minded and accommodating of people's needs and doubts.
Well, it's funny because like in this day, there's, I mean, every little thing that somebody in the church does gets broadcast from the rooftop, right? And so, I mean, back in the day, there was a portion of sort of controlling what the face of the church was. And now it's like, I mean, like you and I talked about the, you know, the way that the MTC expansion was handled really bothered both you and I.
Mm-hmm.
And we, you know, we didn't agree with it, but like that wouldn't have been anything that we would have ever heard 10 years ago. You know, we wouldn't have even known about it.
Well, social media has changed the game. I mean, completely.
Yeah.
Because before social media, sure, stories might have appeared online as news was shifting that way, but how is it going to be shared? People either did it via email or you'd be like, what, on AOL saying, hey, did everybody hear in a chat room?
ICQ.
Yeah.
Uh-oh.
Come on. So it's a different age. It's true. Everyone, social media has kind of forced us all to be open to scrutiny.
What that means to me, though, is that like we have to get to a point where we're okay understanding that there are normal people trying their best in here that are screwing up sometimes. Right. And so that, like, that's kind of, I mean, that's the overarching theme, I guess, in a lot of this. It's just understanding that, you know what? Like, we're all trying our best. And if there are people making mistakes and goofiness happening, and I mean, we've talked about it with Brigham Young and Joseph Smith and all these guys up and down the line. if there's an expectation of perfection in any of them, you're going to be disappointed, right? Like they all had pieces to their personality that influenced how they implemented the gospel or the revelations that they were given. And none of it was done perfectly. And I think the Lord knew that going in, and the expectation we put on them may be unfair at times. So
what do you say to people though? If I can play, I don't know, maybe quasi devil's advocate for
sure,
a second.
Go ahead.
Well, what do you
devil advocate me?
What do you say to people if they bring up genuine issues and not maybe ones like Mountain Meadows is unfortunate or Book of Abraham is unprovable? Those ones I get. But what about stuff like the fact that the church tries to pretend that Joseph Smith did not engage in polygamy, for example? You know, we know there's a bit of a sordid history there.
Yep.
With some of that. What do we even say in those situations? Because I understand how easy it is for anyone to say, look, I get it that prophets are imperfect, but isn't there a certain line that can't be, that like wouldn't be crossed? Like, wouldn't God remove that prophet from prophetship? I don't know. I'm kind of throwing stuff out there. But that's where I see a lot of people have, when they have crises of faith, it stems from things like that. Aside from, of course, being taught one thing from the church's marketing and educational efforts, and then realizing the truth is even something as simple as translation via a stone as opposed to dictation from
sure.
plates. But
sure.
But the more...
Well, so first...
Sure.
First, let me say I don't know. Second, so like with Joseph Smith specifically, right? I would think that if the Lord revealed the principle of polygamy and taught Joseph Smith how to implement it, and he started to... And the fact that he may be overreached, right? So he's like, great, polygamy, eternal principle, implementing it, give it to these three guys. I'm probably supposed to have it too. Off I go, right? Or maybe this is how it's supposed to work. Maybe this is it. Like, I don't necessarily think that, I don't know, but I could see there being an element of well-intentioned buffoonery that comes into play in some of that, where he's like, maybe this is right, right? Like, I mean, you give me parameters and then tell me to go and implement or figure it out. I think there's room for some of that. And so while it may be a little bit egregious to us to look at because we're so far removed from it, at the time he was restoring the principle of polygamy into the church. And so, you know, which is a principle that we understand to be eternal, but not ever practiced again on the earth. But there's pieces of that. And so I think there's room for us to say, screwed up, sure. Well-intentioned, I think so. I mean, I don't have any reason to feel like he would be malicious in that or
oh, right.
trying to take advantage or anything like that. And so that one's a little easier for me to be like, he's a guy. I mean, I keep going back to the idea that you get a glimpse of what the gospel is supposed to be, and then your job is to go and implement it and try your best. And you have social things that from how you were raised and where you were raised and all that stuff that comes into play, which is why Brigham Young and the people that followed him immediately thereafter struggled so much with blacks and the priesthood was such an issue. I mean, that's how I rationalize it to myself. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm giving too much credit where it's maybe not due, but it's okay by me. So I don't know.
Well, okay.
I don't know. I'm really comfortable. I am really comfortable with the idea that I can know, you know, like in the, my old history professor, you know, when we talk about shards of pottery found 30,000 years ago, and he's like, listen, man, I have a testimony of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. I know that it's true. I have a testimony of history and the scientific process we've used to prove this. I don't understand exactly how those two mesh. And, you know, I don't believe in the 6,000 year hoo-ha that's talked about it. Like, I don't believe that's it, but, I believe that the principles found therein are relevant and instructional. And he felt the same way about the flood of Noah. He's like, I absolutely don't believe that that was a literal thing that happened, but I do believe in the principles that are taught there, and that, you know, maybe it was to a smaller degree something that happened, but it did not flood the whole earth. He doesn't believe it, yeah. Right? So,
Al,
I mean,
do you believe in the 6,000 year theory, or do you think it's something else?
No, there's no way to believe in it, right? There's, if you believe in it, then you have to find ways to rationalize so much more, which isn't there. I believe that maybe there are, you know, periods of time which don't exactly equate to how we keep time now or something to that effect.
Sure.
But honestly, I mean, if, well, and even like, to be completely honest, if Adam and Eve looked more like Neanderthals than we thought, I wouldn't be shocked. You know, let's say evolution happened exactly the way that it's preached right now. And Adam was a hairy, hairy dude. And, we've become less hairy as we've had more clothes and things, like whatever it is, right? That wouldn't, if I got to the end and that's what it was, I'd be like, oh yeah, that checks out. Didn't hurt anything I was believing in.
Okay.
I don't know.
I'm trying to open up all points of view, because if you remember last week, we found out that one of us is the left-wing host of this show. And so I'm trying to make sure that we,
oh yeah,
that we supply all points of view. So no, for those who believe in the literal 6,000 years, more power to you. There's nothing wrong with that either. I don't care one way or the other.
Oh, anyway, you were asking me about my weekend. It was good.
Don't care anymore.
I'm off to Baltimore this tomorrow, and then I'm driving my brother to Oakland, which will be fantastic.
I'm wounded that we will be unable to break bread together being so close. But
how wonderful that'd be.
But this happens. Time frames being what they are, we are unable to pick you up at the airport and then go to Chili's. It's very sad.
But what if?
Hey, I guess keeping in that vein, let's talk about when people have good intentions and mess up, maybe. I think that's...
Okay. How is your brother, Colin?
I don't think he listens to the show, really.
That's funny.
My brother, anyway. Danielle. My brother, the talented singer. He's a very talented singer, everyone. He really is.
He is a very talented singer.
He's a great kid. He knows how to do things. He's got skills.
Well, and he's very nice to me. I have no beef with him.
He's got skills. Like, yeah, I remember when you first met him. That was funny. Anyway, another story. But big news came down last week where we talk about LDS public affairs head Michael Otterson wrote sort of an open letter that was published.
Wait. We're leaving the horse head and now going to the public affairs head.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. That was a little bit of a dad joke. Sometimes I get so excited with these punny things. You know, I feel like as I'm getting older, my jokes, I see them the way a dad sees them, and I can't help myself.
Al, it's inevitable. And once you get married, you'll find that the victories you experience are things like, we bought a chair today. Oh, look at this wonderful thing we framed and hung on the wall. And that is a wonderful, beautiful accomplishment. And you're so happy about it.
We've done it.
This is what happens in life. But Michael Otterson, church public affairs head, leader, whatever you want to call him. No horses, no anything.
Heard of him, yes.
He wrote an open letter that's called an open letter, Context Missing from Discussion About Women. And he sent this to many of the various Mormon blogs. And kind of broke down...
How are we not on there?
We're more of a show than a blog, I guess.
Cowards.
I mean, we love it when you visit us on the website.
We have more likes than by common consent. Gosh, dang it.
That's the funny thing. The Great Mormon Blogs, Times and Seasons, By Common Consent especially, weak Facebook presences. Presences?
Yeah.
Presences.
Weak like your mom.
My mom's
okay. Keep going.
She's wonderful. Point is,
she is wonderful.
Of course, he doesn't name ordain women, for example, but he talks about women's issues, which I think is good. And he talks about various criticisms that the church has received and how he can, you know, his own opinion about these and what's right and what's wrong. Criticism number one being that the church doesn't want to hear from women about painful experiences, doesn't talk to them, or only wants to hear from women who are, quote, blindly obedient.
That's what we were led to believe last week with their weak sauce meeting with that frozen lady.
Yeah.
I mean, why would we think anything different? But it's untrue.
And I think so much of the things we talk about here speak to the natural human weaknesses that come from leading from a lay clergy, you know, from leading in a church and stuff like that. You have well-intentioned men with priesthood keys, whatever it, you know, may be. It doesn't mean that they're experts on collaborating with other genders and with delegating and with giving praise where praise is due and with stifling their own opinions in favor of others and stuff like that. There's nowhere that really talks about that and says that those are requirements. Those just come from intuition and hopefully the spirit at the same time. And I think a lot of that's at the root of women who have bad experiences in the church. This is not because people have bad intentions. It's just because people have poor execution without knowing any better. And of course, he makes a note to say that, hey, there's a key point here. Not every woman who describes herself as a feminist wants ordination, but they just want to be valued and given a voice, which is fair.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's very true, right? Because the majority, I think there's a lot of room for, you know, pro-feminist activities within the church, because I do feel like just from a treatment standpoint, there's a lot of room for the Mormon church to improve.
Yeah. Better training. Like he even says here, better training of leaders. He says, does it happen? Unfortunately? Yeah. That people feel, women feel marginalized or demeaned. And he says like there's 30,000 congregations of lay leadership. It would be extraordinary if there were not these imperfections basically. So that's a good thing. One thing to remember, he says many members, of course, just simply don't understand that church leadership at the top is acutely aware of everything that's going on. And I think it is hard. In a global church, it's very easy for us to start assuming that these 15 men in particular up top don't really, you know, get it from here. Yeah. But that's the beauty of the model of home teaching and bishoprics and things. And if we do our job right, the whole point of that is that information gets funneled slowly but surely where it needs to go. So
I wonder, I do believe that even just the apostles, like they travel enough and sit down and have discussions with people. Like every interaction I've had with an apostle has made me come away thinking that they were acutely in tune to the issues going around. I mean, even like to the point of, you know, the goofy trends that teenagers are running into and all that kind of stuff. Like they hear about it, right? They know. So,
yeah, I mean, they
I don't know.
They read magazines. Like we've seen the even the subscriptions that the public affairs department alone gets. It's not like the church tunes out the world and just chugs along blindly, doing what it thinks it needs to do. You've got a top leadership who is well versed in the news of the day and the thinking of the day, and is really aware of what's actually going on in the world around us.
So in his rebuttal to they don't want to hear from them, he says they do, but he does so. Let's see, he says, some years ago, public affairs invited three groups of women, all active Latter-day Saints, including feminists, come for several hours. He uses the term feminist here not to imply political activism or campaigning, but simply as a term to describe those who want to further the interests of women in a variety of ways. I feel like just focusing on trying to get really good at making women feel like their issues or their concerns with that particular topic, you know, like just in being represented, I feel like we could focus on that. We'd be coming a long way, which would be great.
Yeah, and I, like you, I think that there are some things we could do better, which we've said many times on here before. You know, where does it say that a man has to be a Sunday school president? Just stuff like that. Why are there certain roles that don't involve priesthood keys in any way that are
just become bishop and start changing it up, Jeff?
No, let's start
small.
Sunday school presidents, ward mission leader, you know, things like that. I've never understood why.
I'm pulling the wool over them. We're doing it.
Well, that can't be fulfilled by.
So then, criticism number two. He says there's nowhere for women who don't feel safe in their wards to have a conversation about some of their negative experiences that isn't seen as subversive. He says this is a serious question, and I think it's the kind of discussion the brethren welcome as they seek to understand the concerns of the members. So I agree. This is actually a very valid, criticism, right? Because if you do feel like you're a little bit oppressed in your ward, who are you supposed to go to? The bishop, right? That doesn't check out. One of the things that he mentions is he says you have an advocate in that, which is the Relief Society president, right? Now I can think of a number of experiences where the Relief Society president didn't feel like she had an ear of the bishop either. And in any of those circumstances, you were able to go and have a discussion with somebody, even in the stake presidency, who's often been good. And if you continue to feel like you are hitting a brick wall, the beauty of the church is you wait two more years and one of those guys will change, right?
But the other thing I like is that it mentions in that last part that you don't even have to be an advocate necessarily, but you can be a confidant. And be invited to accompany a sister to see a bishop or stake president, which is an interesting little extra coda right there.
Take somebody with you, right?
Actually, take somebody with you. If you feel marginalized and you're not comfortable visiting with a leader, especially one-on-one, and you have spoken with a trusted source like your Relief Society president, that president can sit in with you and talk through things. I also like the second point, though, before that, because it says people shouldn't shy away from initiating an interview with a willingness, but it says to take counsel as well as deliver a message. I think it's very easy to want to schedule meetings with our leaders and just kind of throw our thoughts at them and say, hey, this is wrong, I'm upset. But we also have to be willing to take counsel, which is key.
It's like DeFonz always says, nobody cares how much you know until they know how much you care. Abraham Lincoln said that.
Well, we already got the tickets. There we go. So, by not engaging with more extreme groups, the church and public affairs in particular is not acting as Christ would. And this one is, it's interesting because that's a fair thing to say. Like, hey, Christ would talk to everybody, wouldn't he? Wouldn't Christ just be like, hey, folks, I don't care who you are. I'll straight up talk down the Sadducees. I don't have a problem with this, right?
Well, he wasn't engaging in dialogue. He was telling them they were being jerks.
Yes. But one of the things that I like that he makes a point of here is that the public affairs department works under close supervision and cooperation with the top leadership in the church. And he also makes a point, says, hey, our job is not to, as he says, freelance, to just do whatever we want. Our job is to support the church. It's not to be just a mouthpiece of the church and just push content at people. Their main job is to work on relationships with the church and others,
right,
and even the church's own membership. But, of course, the public affairs department is there to support the church and support the brethren's decisions, not to call them into question or, you know, throw their brethren under a bus.
Well, anyway, well, it was good. It was kind of exciting or encouraging to see a letter from old Mike Otterson on this as he continues to try and clarify and help people understand. The ordained women group responded, even though that wasn't directed at them.
But it sort of was.
Because they responded with a nod that was like, thanks for talking to us.
Good question. One last quote, the one that really made a lot of the rounds. This one's interesting. It says, quote, there are a few people with whom public affairs and general authorities do not engage, such as individuals or groups who make non-negotiable demands for doctrinal changes that the church can't possibly accept. No matter what the intent, such demands come across as divisive and suggestive of apostasy rather than encouraging conversation through love and inclusion. Ultimately, those kinds of actions can only result in disappointment and heartache for those involved. Close quote. So I don't know if that's a shot over the bow of ordained women, but it is very interesting that he went out of his way to say, there are people we don't engage with. Maybe you can fill in the blanks about those with whom we have not engaged at this point. Don't know. And then there are some interesting lessons about why Christ did not ordain women as apostles and why they didn't in the church, which is interesting because if you go to even Ordained Women's website, they show some of the church history where perhaps priesthood was given to women in circumstances, but that's a whole other discussion.
It's worth a read. It is worth a read.
Check it out.
Man, we got some good stuff to talk about today. I'm liking this.
We're already half an hour in and we are barely even touching.
Boof. Let's see. So there's another one. Nephi's Regret.
Do it.
I like this. Was this by common consent as well?
Oh, we are all over by common consent this week.
These guys are Reaganing this week.
Yeah.
Sam Brunson gives a little blip on here where he talks about how in his Sunday school lesson he startled some people by saying that he believed that Nephi didn't necessarily mean to kill Laban or he regretted it later. And sort of got the dialogue going around some of that. And it's interesting because in large part we accept that, you know, it's better that one man should perish and nation dwindle in unbelief, but, it's not very consistent with anything else that we see Nephi do outside of, I mean, in the Book of Mormon largely outside of Teancum. I don't feel like there's any other condoned murders. What a great move. That should be a movie.
I'm going to name my first son Teancum.
But he kind of goes through, he has a couple of bullet points that are kind of, I mean, it's just interesting to think about, right? He says, as a general rule, killing is wrong.
Yeah.
And he says, I start from the idea in the scriptures that the scriptures never present perfect prophets, or prophets in the scriptures are perfectly capable of making mistakes. It's also worth noting that when this happened, Nephi was clearly not a prophet yet. His being a spiritual
leader
happened later.
Yeah. That's a very interesting one to me.
Laban's death is a pivotal moment in Lehite history. With Laban dead, they can't go back. They're leaving forever. And then maybe Lehi didn't necessarily appreciate it. They talk about when Nephi returned with the plates, they ended up burning sacrifice to purge sin. And then you have Nephi's psalm, which he reads into it as sort of, you know, some of the guilt that he feels would obviously be related to this murder, right? This murder of Laban. I thought it was interesting just because a lot of times we read through this as, I mean, we don't bother to critically think through some of these stories and what maybe the lesson here is. I mean, if it's just a diary of a man that's you know, especially one that's written later, I'm sure he's cleaned it up a little bit and like come to terms with what he had to do and where it needed to be and the fact that it wasn't the end of the world for them. But I mean, probably like, I don't know. It's interesting to see Nephi as a guy that's figuring it out along the way. Worth reading through and thinking about if you got an empty Sunday one day.
Yeah, I think some people, you know, I always thought that the offerings, though, were offerings of thanks, not offerings to purge sin. I've never read it any other way. I think that's a kind of a weird way to take it personally.
Well, when you sacrifice, I mean,
you didn't offer up sacrifices of an animal solely to redeem oneself from sin. You offered sacrifice proactively in thanks for what was then under Mosaic law, what the Lord was giving you.
All right. I don't actually know if that's true or false.
Oh, it's true.
I need to go look. I will go read more.
Good thing we're studying the Old Testament this year, everybody. Learn all about it. But it's an interesting read. I don't know. I mean, I think either way, I think what it does is it should compel us to read deeper into the scriptures and really, really ponder. So if Sam Brunson, if he's wrong, you know, if he's just making stuff up based on what he's looked into, the point is he's at least taking the time to kind of dig deeper and see reasoning and rationale and what might actually be going on in the scriptures rather than just, face value.
Yeah, there's no need to derail your Sunday school conversation, but I feel like stuff like this, maybe, you know, if you've thought through it, it's worth mentioning in some of that to sort of help people take a different view to some of this stuff.
Yeah.
Don't keep beating on it, but like throw it out there. Share some thoughts and ideas.
Yeah. I think it's a cool thing to read. Check it out, folks. Check it out. Let's see. Okay. A couple quick ones. Let's see here. Oh, first off, everyone loved this one last week. The Utah school that is airbrushing modesty onto its girls. Wasatch High, everybody. Congratulations.
Fixing the top shelf crack, as they call it.
They are doing a great job. I believe Wasatch High is in Heber City. So, you know.
Oh, boy.
Living the dream out there. And, yeah. So these girls say that their yearbook photos were meant to shame them, which is interesting. To shame. I mean, I think it's dumb in and of itself, but were they actually shaming them?
Well, we're...
I mean, did they offer a comparison and say, look what we did, you little jerk?
No, they say, this woman was so indecent, we had to fix it ourselves.
And it happened to many different girls where they,
Why can't they spend their time airbrushing out zits? You know, I feel like people would have responded with gratitude. Instead, you're airbrushing out cleavage, and there is nobody that's excited about that. No, not a soul. Neither man nor woman
but still,
wants cleavage to be gone.
This, of course, calls to mind, you know, Karl Bloch's angels that we gave capped sleeves to and removed their wings.
Oh, I love that song.
Or the pictures, of the little girl where we made sure she wasn't in a sundress and gave her sleeves. Ugh. And just stuff like that. It's a little bit different for high school students, right? Sure, that's at the age when you want to be preaching modesty and appreciating stuff like that. But I think these go a little bit, one, they go above and beyond. Two, it's still their personal choice to do whatever they want. And I don't think it's the school's job to, force its morality on them. They might have dress and grooming standards. That's a thing. I went to high school in Southern California, so the dress and grooming standards were loose or non-existent. In their case, though, in Utah, a bit more stringent, perhaps? Yeah.
Perhaps.
We should be embarrassed, though, because this reflects poorly upon Mormon social norms.
Why? Because it happened in Utah, where there happens to be some Mormons?
It happened in Heber City. Not just Utah. No. Heber City.
Never mind.
These rules would not
exist.
Let's
see. Ars Technica picked up an article this week.
Oh, yeah.
On the update to the that old Data Mormon site.
Mormon Match,
that was getting
Yes.
It was getting sued by the church for using the word Mormon in their stuff. So the, let's see, the EFF is coming to their
That's the Electronic Frontier Foundation, by the way.
Well, this is big that it's picked up by Ars Technica, because that's a big, in the tech world, this is like a very popular news site. And so there's, sure. they're paying some attention to it, putting the church in the spotlight. And it's interesting that, that you know, the church is kind of picking this as something they're bothering to fight, because there's so much of that out there. I mean, LDS singles and blah, blah, blah. Like, why pick this one? And the guys running it have the, have a similar reaction to it of like, what are you doing to us? So interesting to see where it goes. There's a lot of comments and buzz around it.
The comments on Ars Technica, as you might imagine, are not exactly, pro.
They're not complimentary. Yeah. Boy, sure.
Pro, you know, sympathetic ones, but I just do think it's absurd. I guess. Yeah. Now they've got this company, this or this group lobbying on their behalf. I like that. They say they're like, you suing them over the word Mormon is like, you know, Burger King suing In-N-Out about both of them serving, quote, burgers.
Yeah.
Even though it's a little bit different. I don't fully understand all the church's intellectual property rules with Mormon, Book of Mormon, for example, which is, as far as I know, trademarked.
Book of Mormons. Books of Mormons.
Because not anyone can publish the Book of Mormon. I believe the church owns the rights to that. You can't just go and make your own cut. This isn't, you know, a King James version of the Bible, which you can do whatever you want with. This is the Book of Mormon.
Oh, yeah.
So it's fascinating, and I think it makes the church look bad. And strange, because aren't there so many other websites they could go after or things?
Can we please go after LDS LinkUp, for crying out
That's
loud?
That's LDS, though. They don't go after things called LDS.
Let's,
but still, I have to ask again, why go after a dating site that is for active Mormons and then not go
by
after...
active Mormons.
And then not go after... The Book of Mormon musical.
Thank you, Jeff. Which finally says, somebody had the courage and the audacity to ask the hard
questions. I'm sorry. I have to say it.
We're talking to you, Michael Otterson.
Because that's so...
We want an answer.
I'm not a lawyer, but that's so weird to me. Because all I see this as is, again, choosing one's battles. You've got all the power of Intellectual Reserve Incorporated going after some Mormon dating site versus the media storm that would surround Mormon church sues Trey Parker and Matt Stone, which would be it's just crazy. Because anyway, we'll be following this.
I don't get it either.
More and more, of course, everyone. More and more, it shall be followed. Stay with me, Al. You look tired. Stay with me.
Keep it up. Let's rock.
So
I'm not going.
Did you know
anywhere.
That David Archuleta is not dead?
He's not gay.
He's not dead.
Oh, wait, which one? Is he not dead or gay?
He's not dead, and to my knowledge, he is not gay. Are you want him to be gay and dead, is what you're saying?
Neither of those. No, well, I mean, no. I misheard. I plead the fifth.
I guess, yeah, you know, he's just letting people know that he says, I'm not dead. I don't think anyone was worried that he was dead.
Is that just one of the dumb, like... One of the dumb so-and-so's dead, click on this story. You're not going to believe what happens next.
I hate those. So the point is, he's alive. But he did say he left Los Angeles because he felt the atmosphere was sort of toxic. Which I can understand,
that.
Especially when you're, what, less than 6 months off your mission? Yeah, that could be. It's a different beast. It's hard to navigate those waters. I've got lots of metaphors here. Beasts, waters, volcanoes, whatever you want. Go, Al. Take me to more.
Okay, yeah.
Take me to more.
Okay, yeah, yeah. Well, I was reading about David Archuleta. I didn't bother to click on the story.
He's not dead and
before.
He's not gay. That's all you need to know.
So speaking of gay, did you know Elder D. Todd Christofferson's brother is gay?
If you're asking rhetorically, I will say nothing.
No, I'm asking you. Did you know this?
I knew because I've put the story there. So yes. Oh, but before that, I did not know.
You're very good. I didn't know either. Peggy Fletcher Stack does a little write-up on this, on Tom Christofferson's spiritual journey. I like the way that their family dealt with this, though. So it says his family, which includes a brother, LDS Apostle D. Todd Christofferson, continued to love him. So after he came out, he asked for excommunication from the LDS Church and lived as a gay man with a permanent partner. Then his family continued to love him without reservation. And then quoting that, he says, quite soon after I came out, my parents took an opportunity to express to my brothers and their wives their determination that nothing would be allowed to break the circle of love that binds us all together as a family. As they expressed it, while none of us is perfect as individuals, we can be perfect in our unconditional love for each other. And man, I can't think of the good that would come to the gay community within the Mormon church if that was the reaction from each of their parents, right? Yeah. If they felt comfortable having this conversation with their parents, knowing that the reaction would be, we love you, we will continue to love you.
Yeah. I mean, Utah, unfortunately, leads the nation in the number of homeless gay youth. And that's...
Really?
Yeah.
Is that a real thing?
That's a real thing. It's a big problem in Utah. Because parents, you know, I know it's hard and every family's different, but I think the worst thing you could do is say, oh my goodness, you have ruined the dream. You must get out of my house. It's over. I have no son. I mean, what is that? It doesn't do any good.
Does anybody ever actually say that anymore?
I have no son.
I have no son.
No, it's cliche.
Yeah, I don't feel like any dad would... Well, maybe I'm wrong. I live a very sheltered life amongst loving parents.
Yeah, Ron's a very
so
kind
I'm
fella.
Sorry. I'm sorry if your parents are ones that would say, I have no son.
Can you actually...
Never come back here.
I would like you to get your dad to come up and do a recording, bring Ron in there, and have him say, I have no son. And I want...
I don't think he could do it. I don't think he could do it.
I think he'd cry.
I think he could get, I have son. That's all he could do, and he'd be like, you're going to have to fill in the blanks, because I can't say I have no son.
As a side note, your parents came to D.C. last week and didn't even say hi to me. I'm so wounded.
They were going to call you. They had 4 hours to get to the airport, and then Dad was like, well, that's just enough time to get there. They ended up, by the time they got the car returned and everything and got through traffic, they only had 40 minutes to make their flight. They were very glad.
Oh, my goodness. Well, I'm glad they're okay.
Drama, 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 Jeff.
Drama, drama, drama. The point is, though, about the Elder Christofferson story is that his brother left. They had a lot of love. But then he felt a yearning a number of years ago, Tom Christofferson, to come back. And so actually he and his partner have started attending services. And then, of course, Tom Christofferson spoke on a panel at the North Star Conference, which is a group that serves same-sex attracted Latter-day Saints who still want to live the teachings of the gospel. And that conference actually happened over the weekend, and he spoke there. We're in a very interesting place. I think it's
interesting.
This is great dialogue that we're able to have.
Well, and the fact that it's the brother of an apostle, I feel like that's something that I'm
move
surprised
over,
we didn't know about.
Move over Dick Cheney. Oh, yeah.
After watching, I'm in my into the middle of the second season of The West Wing, I feel like my reaction to this should be, who's vetting this guy? How did we not know about this? This should have been right there.
We had someone comment last week that The West Wing was a terrible show.
That's what I believed as well until I got through the first season. The first eight episodes I watched only because I respected you as an individual, Jeff, and for no other reason.
Let's read the comment from Mark Pugner. Ugh, The West Wing is a terrible show. Nothing but radical left-wing propaganda direct from the Democratic Party.
Gun control, gun control, gun control. That's all I'm hearing too. Hey, I'm on your side.
Well, yeah.
But Josh almost dies, you know?
People, what are you
going to... Spoiler alert.
Oh, yeah. What happens in the end of season one? Is that the...
The shooting.
The Roslyn shooting. Oh, that's excellent. I love watching that show and looking at the places that... Because they film around here for things. That's fun. It's so exciting.
That's very
so fun. Exciting. Did you know that Deseret News apparently might be padding its circulation numbers? This will be for all you.
That sounds like them. That
so
sounds like them.
We spoke a few months ago. We knew that Deseret News was including their national edition in copies of the Church News, which I was not pleased to receive at all. I don't subscribe to Church News, but bundled with my Ensign, there was a Church News and a Deseret News National. And I was upset because I said, this is crossing the line between my religious subscription and a newspaper I don't care about. And I don't want to feel like they're supposed to be bundled together. So yeah. Apparently, though, now they've been pushing their national edition in other just random regional newspapers, not forcing it, but actually getting them to include it on the weekends. And because of this, Deseret News is actually using those numbers to report their Sunday print circulation. So Deseret News report, because the Trib has always out-circulated Deseret News. But now Deseret News for the weekend issues is reporting higher circulation than the Trib because they're forcing their national edition.
Look at the Trib breaking this news that their competitors are cheaters.
Al, I think you should do something similar. Why don't you write an op-ed for the Stupid. Quilt shop that says, like, Martha's Quilt Vineyard in St. Joseph is weak and they lie about everything.
You know I wouldn't do that, Jeff, because there's no class in that. No hey, class. Salt Lake Trib, are you listening? There's no class in being a sore loser.
Desperate times are going on the Trib. Everyone's getting laid off. They're worried about this joint operating agreement. A lot of bad things are happening there.
Yep, so true. So true.
Carry on, sir. Keep going.
All right, so let's see here. There is a missionary who finished his mission on Prince Edward Island after being sent home from the Ukraine.
That's rough.
I'm sorry, from Ukraine. What did I
just say? Did you say the Ukraine?
I sure did.
This show is over. Accident. It's done.
Edit it out, Jeff. Take it out and post.
No. There are things I do, but I will not do that.
So anyway, this kid had nothing interesting to say. Kind of a worthless article. It was scary while he was over there, and he prayed a lot. That's all you need to know. That stuff. So Ukraine right now is still a mess.
Yeah, and the worst thing is now it's less in the news than it was before.
Well, so Russia pulled back from the border a bit, and but pro-Russian activists, which obviously are finding a lot of support from the boys in Moscow.
Many of them are Chechens as well.
Oh, I'm sure. And why are Chechens pro-Russian? They're anti-Russian.
That's a whole other discussion. We can talk about the Chechen wars and the things Putin changed legally and blah blah blah. But the point is, there are pro-Russian Chechen militants that do exist.
Chechens, yes.
No, they're called Chechens.
That's not correct.
Oh, I forgot. And so, who has the master's degree in nationalism studies between?
No,
the
I forgot. Who speaks the language?
You speak Chechen.
Chechnyan.
A Caucasian language?
Well, you're making these families of languages up. The Mongoliac language?
Here.
I still don't recognize this.
The Chechen people I just sent you. Now let's...
Chechnyan.
Nope.
So,
the Chechen language.
Yeah. So that stuff is happening. There's like people dying though, where when we were heavy on it, it was, when it was all over the news, there was like two people dead. And now there's like dozens dying as they're taking over different military bases and attacking people in
it's ugly stuff.
The East regions. It's crazy.
Another quick mention.
Temple is still operating though.
Yeah, well, it's in Kyiv, and I guess Kyiv is comparatively...
Yeah, there were no riots in Kyiv, Jeff.
Comparatively, Kyiv is quiet. Cool news though, the church received official recognition in Vietnam.
Vietnam?
This doesn't mean... This doesn't mean there will be any missionaries. There are still no missionaries in Vietnam. But what it does mean is the church can, for one, officially report its statistics on actual membership. So there's actually 1,600 members in Vietnam. Okay, and they've all been meeting, privately up until this point. And it will allow, of course, broader worship. It's, it's Vietnam. It's opened up a lot, but it's still a communist government. So it's slow going. But the point is, with government approval, the church can expand a bit more in Vietnam.
Wait, so that's why this is exciting, is because now we're on the road to, putting missionaries in there?
Maybe. It's just a first step, but it's a big step. It's a big step to get legal
recognition. What's the next step? As the president in the West Wing would say, what's next?
Well,
what's next?
I would argue.
can you tell I watch like three episodes a night while
president
I'm trying
Bartlett
to turn
would
through
argue, I would argue.
Yeah.
That, I don't know if the next step would be missionaries because, that could be a ways off because it's still a communist government and religion, and things and blah, blah, blah. But it's slow going, glacial, but that's okay. It's a step better probably than Laos, so that's fine. And in a related note, Cambodia next door just got two stakes last week. That's exciting.
And furthermore, in Thailand, they had a military coup and had to evacuate all the missionaries, right?
Yeah, it's kind of funny. I actually had a... Facebook.
Real funny, Jeff. No,
tell us
how funny
this is. Did they actually evacuate missionaries? I didn't see anything about that.
I thought they did.
No, I had someone saying, I need to go somewhere this year, and I've been thinking about Southeast Asia. I've been really leaning heavily on Thailand. This person publishes this whole post like, so here's my choices. The Philippines maybe, Vietnam, Cambodia, Thailand, but I really think I should do Thailand. And this is on the day. This is like an hour after the coup is announced. And so all these comments are like, probably want to skip Thailand. Just, military just took over the country. Maybe not the best idea for you at this time.
Oh, no. They didn't evacuate the missionaries in Thailand. They just sent them home and told them to stay inside.
Man, I wish something like that would have happened to me on my mission. What a vacation.
Woo! Grow your beard. You know what I'm saying?
I wouldn't
grow
shave.
Your beard.
It would be such a break from having glass thrown at me by gypsies. That would have been exciting. Bless the gypsies. I've seen gypsies do the full range of human awfulness. not to pick on gypsies themselves, but this has happened primarily with the gypsy community. So whatever. I'm not like a lot of the Spaniards who like openly will not associate with the gypsy community. I'm just saying I saw lots of funny things.
What are you saying right now? It's ridiculous.
What are you saying? What is this?
That's a friend of mine on Facebook. Amazing, right? Anyway.
What is this? Why?
Amazing.
Talk to me about it offline.
Let's see. Jeff, Twitter at church, yay or nay?
I'm torn on this, and that's what I used to say nay. Now I say nay, typically. I used to say yay, and I realized at a point it became a distraction.
I am battling to just keep my phone in my pocket. I'm bringing physical scriptures. I find that if I pull my phone out, I disengage from the world, and I end up like...
Yeah.
I spend the afternoon emailing and playing Two Dots. You know, mm-hmm. That's what I'm doing. I'll be honest with you.
It's funny for...
Now that I've conquered everything in Kingdom Rush, I have nothing left to do.
For me, it's kind of funny because there's a distinction. I have my phone, but I have my tablet as well. And since my tablet, I don't know if it's just being Wi-Fi only or the fact that it's not tied to a phone number, but I feel less distracted on my tablet. I pretty much just use it to bring up, lessons, scriptures, play videos for the kids in primary, blah, blah, blah.
Hill climb.
Blah, blah, blah. It could also be that it's a two-year-old Nexus 7 and it's slower now, so I try to limit what I actually go after doing on it.
Sweet, sweet mother. Jeff, we have used some time here. Let's see.
The time is wonderful. It is not far spent. It is beautiful.
Other great stuff.
Peggy Fletcher.
The Mormon.
I've got one. Peggy Fletcher. Pareto
principle.
No. Me. Went to China. It's actually a cool story. She went there with her husband.
Wait, PFS went to Ghana?
Yeah, she went to Ghana. Went there with her husband, who has the greatest hair in the world. And she actually does a profile of American-based or founded religions that are seeing great growth in Ghana. Jehovah's Witnesses, Seventh-day Adventists, and Latter-day Saints. And going through the belief systems, talking to people about what makes them adhere to one or the other. Of course, the church, our church, is the smallest, but we've had the least amount of time there. We've only been there since 78. Curious year, 1978. We went to West Africa.
Yeah, cut us a break, huh?
It's a fascinating year to go do those things, 78. What with, official declarations and such.
Well, that's great.
So anyway, check it out. It's actually a good read. I think it's cool. Cool video to accompany it. Good for them.
Anyway.
We had some listener mail.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So we want to give a shout out.
We'll get out of here.
We're trying to do more listener mail. We often get emails from you guys, but we don't. We might respond to you, but we never talk about it. But we want to thank Lynn. Lynn, thank you for writing us an email. This is the kind of thing, at least for me, when I read this and I said, "Are you serious? I am a schmo who brings very little positive anything to the world."
I can vouch for that.
I know.
Ask
right?
his wife.
And so I'm going to read this to you. It's very brief, and this is with Lynn's permission. So it says, "My name is Lynn, and I just discovered your podcast, and boy, do I love it. I'm getting baptized into the church on the 7th, and I thought though it took me a long time to make the decision, I know it's the one that God wants me to make. TWIM has been a great way for me to learn more about the church, and it's also helped me realize that I should join the church. So thanks for all that you guys do." How do you even respond?
Well,
to that?
First, awesome. Lynn, congratulations on making a decision.
That's
great.
That's coming up, I believe, on Saturday. So let's all support Lynn, everybody.
We can go out there. We can do that, Jeff. Second, Jeff, do you feel like TWIM is representative of what she'd find in the church? I hope it is.
I like to think that we offer a reasonable, normal human approach to things. And in that sense,
that's the goal. That's the goal.
I mean, we're not fanatics.
Well, good. And I'm very flattered as well that, it's one of those, things. Like I remember on my mission, we used to, we had these dumb, like little hang tag things. We'd be like, want to learn more about the Book of Mormon? Grab one of these things and call us. And we plastered them up for like, weeks. We put them up. Yeah. And one of the missionaries was like, "This is so dumb. Is this never gets anywhere?" And somebody was like, "Oh no, actually, we baptized a guy a couple of months ago that had called off one of these." He's like, "Never mind, I take it all back. If it got one guy, every stupid thing we blew up is worth it." Well, and it's kind of that same thing, right? Where a lot of what you and I do. I mean, we're clearly vivid bros, and you're a leftist.
Yeah,
radio.
I'm
host.
A Maoist.
We do what we can. We have fun doing it, and we forget that. you know, there's a chance to bring some good into some people's lives. So we're very cool to hear.
I'm extremely flattered that I could have any kind of an effect like that. So it's just, you know, great news. But we really just want to congratulate you, Lynn, and to anybody else who's thinking about joining the church or has and whatever. I mean, congratulations to you. Be faithful.
Anybody else thinking about it? Please do.
And we're glad. Yeah, Mormonism is wonderful, and it's full of humans. It's full of flawed humans, but it's full of great people who love Christ.
Blue man.
And who want to do what's right, even if sometimes we fail to do it the way we should do it. But we're trying, and we try to learn it better and know things better.
All right, Jeff. Hey, everybody, you can get in touch with us. Email us at contact@thisweekinmormons.com. We'd love to hear from you, or visit us on the web, thisweekinmormons.com, and listen to our shows.
If you have one of those devices that Newt Gingrich is incapable of actually naming, you can go to, you know, Facebook on an app, or Twitter, or Google+, or Instagram, any number of social media outlets on one of these devices, or on your computer for that matter, and hang out with us. We'd love to see you there.
Oh, that'd be fun.
Also, of course, Sunday School Bonanza, third Hour of Power, our other podcasts. Keep an eye out for those. We'd love to get you more ready for Sunday School and things along those lines. We're happy to do it. We enjoy it. We love everybody.
It's true. All right, Jeff, I'll talk to you next week, buddy.
Okay, well, have fun in Baltimore. And when it's 5 p.m. tomorrow and I'm leaving work and I know that you're touching down a mere 40 miles away from me,
pour out a root beer for me.
I will start singing Somewhere Out There. Beneath
and
the
I'll
pale
sing John Denver's Country Boy.
Well, that doesn't make any sense. You're going to be in Baltimore. You're just going to be lucky you're
alive.
I don't understand
why it's happening, but I'm just going to go
with
it.
If you make it through an evening in Baltimore, you deserve the Medal of Honor.
Yeah, it's true. All right, buddy. Hey, I'll see you next week, man.
See you, buddy. Everyone, thanks for tuning in. We love doing This Week in Mormons, and we hope to keep doing it for you. So please listen in, share, and help us grow the nation, if you will. And we'll talk to you later. Have a great week. This Week in Mormons signing off.
Flock of birds hovering above, just a flock of birds. That's how you think of love. In a small